माधव कुंजाबिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंजाबिहारी जन बाला गिरी बार धारी पीटन बाला गिरी बार धारी यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुन तीरावन यमुन तीरावन जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिवृजकाचार्य सुप्रसिद्ध सरस्वती श्रीमद्भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिवृजकाचार्य सुप्रसिद्ध सरस्वती श्रीमद्भक्ति प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णविंद की जय। नामाचार्य सोहरदास ठाकुर की जय। प्रेम से कौन श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवास आदि गौर भक्तवृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गो गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरि गोवर्धन की जय। श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय। मायापुर नवद्वीप धाम की जय। जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय। श्री नूरानमृति की जय। श्री भक्त विनोद ठाकुर की जय। समवेत भक्तवृंद की जय। गौ प्रेमानंद all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to C.C. Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Shiva Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Agyana Timurandasya Ganandana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So today's class will be on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I chose a particular theme. When you look at someone's life, especially someone as diverse, influential, boundless character, to try to capture that in a short lecture is a challenge, practically not possible. So what I'm going to do is try to connect the dots so that we can see how influential Bhaktivinoda Thakur was specifically in spreading Krishna consciousness in the English language. So the umbrella is the English language, and how that manifested and how he was influential in it are the dots that I'll try to create so we can all see how they connect. Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Satchidananda Bhaktivinoda, who is the transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis headed by Sri Rupa. There are various incarnations of the Lord that manifest Dharma, or the activities for the conditioned living entities, to elevate them and elevate their consciousness. Of course, the goal of the whole material world is to elevate the conditioned souls back to their original constitutional position of serving Krishna. But due to conditioning by material nature, we have forgotten the details of that loving bond. So the Lord, at different times and places and circumstances throughout history, manifests specific activities for dharmic activity that will elevate everyone. There are six different kinds of incarnations of the Lord. Can anyone help me? Give me some ideas what they are. Guna Avatar.
Leela Yukta.
Leela Yukta.
Purusha.
Shaktivesha. And Manvantara Avatar. So those are the six. I kind of like to look at them as kind of like the bird's eye view out and then in. So you go Purusha Avatars. Karna Dakshai Vishnu, Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, Kshira Dakshai Vishnu. Leela avatars, where they come from the spiritual sky into the material world. Guna avatars, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Manvantara avatars throughout time. Yuga avatars in the sections of those. And Saktivesha avatars for specific activities in a particular time period. And the Vedas describe this concept. Krishna says, Paritanaya sadhanam vinishaya tuduskatam dharma samstarpanathaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Dharma samstarpanathaya means to establish the religion of the time, to protect the devotees, to annihilate the demons, but also to establish religious principles. So how the English language becomes one of those tools is what I'm going to discuss. So first let's look at the time period of the Yuga avatar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in 1486 and left in 1533. So in 1486, what happened 6 years later? In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. So Columbus, during the same time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, made his trip from Portugal, or Spain, to the Western world, which kicked off and started an entire series of events that took hundreds of years to develop, just like the example in the Vedas of the creation. First, there's the glance of Mahavishnu on Pradhan. And there's the descriptions of how the dots, how the material world unfolds from that, due to that glance. How from the subtle, the gross material elements are created. Then how Garbha Dakshai Vishnu expands, and from him Lord Brahma comes. Then there's all the planets in the stem of the lotus flower. Then there's the different bodies of the living entities. The whole thing unfolds like that. So similarly, if we look at this series of events, of how Columbus came to the West, Magellan, Francis Drake, all kinds of different enterprises from various European countries, mostly England, France, the Netherlands, the Dutch, the Portuguese, and the Spanish started to send out different merchants and investigators and what do they call them? Seafarers.
Pardon?
Explorers, thank you.
Cutthroats.
That came a little later.
Mercenaries.
Yes. Persecutors.
Rascals.
Right. But in the course of that action, it took about 100 years, if Columbus went in 1482, call it 1500. By 1600, the roots were well known, but there wasn't much trade or anything like that. They had mapped the world and they were starting to go. But starting in 1600, especially in India, I mean, Columbus was looking for India in the beginning. So there's very detailed descriptions, because the East India Company was a British company and they wanted to increase international trade. At that time, the Mughals were dominant administrators in India. We all know Nawab Hussein Shah with Dabir Khas and Saqir Malik and Lord Chaitanya's time. So when I did my research on Jagannath Puri, I read about how in maybe 1615, there's a big river between Bhuvaneswar and Cuttack in Orissa called the Mahanadi. And there was one English trader who came there, but the area at that time was being ruled by a Mughal. So he had to go, this English trader wanted to start to do trade. Orissa was good with textiles. It's always been good with those nice saris. And different spices and things. So he went to the Mughal emperor and had to kiss his foot in order to get permission. Now, for an Englishman to kiss the foot of someone for permission to do something was unheard of, but he did it. They got permission, and that happened throughout India in various different ways. The East India Company in the 1600s and 1700s started to expand its merchant activities. In fact, they did it all over the whole planet. They started going to the South Pacific. They started to go to the Bahamas and the Caribbean. And they colonized 3/4 of the world by the 1800s. And they established schools in all these different places and wanted to influence the world with their way of life. So by the 1800s, India was the dominant controller of India. And in 1838, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or Kedarnath Dutt, took birth. So the English language, the English-speaking people, the English culture was ingrained in the world he grew up in. He was the son of Raj Krishnananda Dutt. He was born in Birnagar. And his family was very wealthy at the time he was born. If you've ever been to his house, it's a huge complex. It's like those squares, like a big rectangle, and all the different rooms in it, quite large, with a courtyard. But by the time he was 11, his world drastically changed. His father died, and there was a cholera epidemic which came to that village. So his mother made arrangements for him to move to Calcutta with his uncle, Kasi Prasad Ghosh. So his upbringing was kind of normal. First, a lot of the times, this is interesting too, another thing that I came across, was that normally when we read about somebody else describing a Vaishnav being born and brought up, invariably, almost all of them, they say he was totally detached, he wasn't interested in family life, he learned the scriptures, he learned the languages, and by the time he was a teenager, he was, known throughout the village as a very pure-hearted person. That's the normal kind of concept of Vaishnavs. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all this information is coming from his own autobiography. So he doesn't write like that at all. He writes about the difficulties and reveals the difficulties he had in life and his shortcomings and the fallings and failings and struggles. So when he was 12, like that, he moved to Calcutta, and his uncle, Kasi Prasad Ghosh, was very intricately woven in his life with the British culture of Calcutta at the time. India was the jewel of the British Empire, and Calcutta was the capital of Bengal. It was a beautiful, lush, gorgeous place. So Kasi Prasad Ghosh was part of a elite, kind of upper class Bengali person, the Brahmins, the Vaishyas, and the Kshatriyas were part of a cultured class called the Bhadralok. And these Bhadralike Lok were kind of like high class Bengali gentlemen that were intricately active with the British. There wasn't a lot of negativity about the British at this time and their rule. They actually had done a really good job. They're super intelligent the way they got their educational systems. They got the life of the Christian missionaries there, and Hinduism was actually frowned upon. It was looked upon like idolatry, and there was a lot of low class Vaishnava activities going on at the time. So, but this Kasi Prasad Ghosh was also the editor of a magazine called the Hindu Intelligencer. And all kinds of people, of course, at that time there were no cell phones, there wasn't TV, there wasn't radio. So the main format for communicating with one another, especially for thoughts and philosophy, was writing, newspapers and different kinds of periodicals. And Kasi Prasad Ghosh had a very influential magazine in that, especially amongst the Bhadralok community, well thought of, and there was all kinds of discussions that would go on in their magazines back and forth with writings. And Bhakti Kedarnath, his nephew, became one of the editors, and he would peruse the different articles that came from the different authors and then talk with Kasi Prasad Ghosh. And as time went on, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, he stayed in Calcutta and became extremely proficient in English, in writing, in publishing. He actually learned this as a young man. However, it was very difficult for him and his family. He writes, "At that time I was 17 years old and I had to face terrible hardships. There was no money. I could hardly speak to anyone. Everyone thought that my mother had money. No one believed that we were poor. So I saw no hope. My mind became apathetic. The house was empty. I had no strength. And my heart was dying of pain." What usually happens when somebody's in that kind of a forlorn consciousness is that they search for reasons and answers and information how to become relieved. And when he transferred to the age of 17, 18 and went to college, he came across another older boy named Dvijendranath, and they became very close friends and started to study philosophy. He went so deep into trying to understand what is the purpose of this life. How can I find the answers? He's 17, 18, 19 years old. And gradually, he actually became quite interested in Christian theology. Here's some of the books he read: Channing, Theodore Parker, Emerson, Newman, Kant, Goethe, Hegel, Swedenborg, Hume, Voltaire, Schopenhauer, and also the books of the Brahma Samaj, which was a Hindu Shmindu group at the time. So that period of his life took him into philosophy. He had already learned how English. He had already learned how to publish. He had already learned how to write. And now it's like another layer of intelligence by understanding philosophy and understanding the world, although he hadn't left Calcutta and Birnagar, that's all he'd been to. So by the time his last days of college were there, his grandfather, I think it's on his paternal side, because the maternal side, his mother's family wasn't very religious, but his father's side was. So his grandfather had become a recluse. He had taken sannyas, left home, and was living in Orissa. Orissa and Bengal, they're practically the same thing, although they call them different states, but it's a big territory with very similar, the language is a little bit different, but the environment, the worship of Krishna is very similar in that part of India. So he was in the hills of Orissa, in a recluse place, but he attained some kind of a mystic ability to understand the future. So he contacted his nephew, his grandson, Kedarnath, through letter and said, "You please come. I'm going to be leaving this world soon. I want you to come and spend some time with me." So after that foundation of his life, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kedarnath Dutt at the time, 18, 19 years old, went to Orissa and spent several months with his grandfather, who had become Vaishnav, interested in religion, understanding the goal of life. He was going to die, so he was preparing himself like this. And that kind of switched Bhaktivinoda's focus. And his grandfather made one request of him before he left. He said, "You please travel to all the different mutts of Orissa. See them, understand the culture that you were born into." So after his passing, Bhaktivinoda spent some time traveling to all those different Orissan mutts. Sakshi Gopal, Chirachoda Gopinath, so many. And naturally, while he did that, his awakening kind of pried open a new point of view, although not greatly. But he started to understand about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he also understood that he had to get some sort of a livelihood. But after finishing his travels, he wrote his first English book. It was called Mutts of Orissa. And he actually wrote it in English to try and help the English people and the Bhadralok understand the culture that was existing in Orissa at the time. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was 12 years old, just before he went to that to Calcutta to live with his uncle, his mother, knowing that they were poor, arranged his marriage with a wealthy family. At that time in India, prearranged marriage with children was the way that the culture was existed. So when he was 12, he was married to his wife, who was 5, and of course they don't live together, but the understanding is there, and they were married. Now, when we were living in Orissa, when we were living in Jagannath Puri, there was a man there named Ramachandra Das, who was very friendly to us. He was one of the few Puri Basis who was really favorable to Westerners. And he was in his late 60s when we met, in his 80s when he passed away. And he had grown up in the same way. So we got a chance to sit and talk with him several times about prearranged marriage in a culture. And it's fascinating how, if the whole culture is geared around that, how acceptable it is and how practical it is. Oftentimes in modern day, it's difficult for us to understand how Krishna or even kings had so many wives. But if the culture of lifestyle is such that everybody's in harmony with that, it changes the entire perception of it. So he described that the natural, this Ramachandra explained to us, that the natural method was that you met your wife when you were a child, and you knew that that was going to be your life's partner throughout your life. And of course you didn't love each other, you didn't even know each other. But the idea was that when you got married and started to live together, that you would develop your relationship, sambandha abhideha prayojana, with each other, so that your loving relationship would develop throughout your lifetime. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at this time also, when he was traveling and everything, traveled with his wife, and by the time, he was 21 when his first child was born. But 10 months after the baby was born, she died. So he was with an infant, without income, and arranged a marriage with Bhagavati Devi, who would become his lifelong partner and mother of 13 more children. And rather than going into business, which he didn't care for at all, didn't want to get into that, he was too much of a philosopher and thoughtful person for that, so he became a teacher for some time. I'll read some different quotes that I found, because it helps me kind of put these pieces together. In 1866, at age 28, Kedarnath received, with a friend's help, a position with the registrar's office as a special deputy registrar of assurances with powers of a deputy magistrate and deputy collector. Now, in colonial Bengal, a job at the executive government service, staffed mostly by the Bhadra Lok, was the most coveted achievement that earned one's financial security, social status, and protected retirement. So when he was 28 years old, a whole other shift came in his life. He finished teaching, he had a wife, she had her first child, and he got a position in the government. And he was part of that Bhadra Lok community, which was very influential, wealthy, started to get good income, and social status and facility. For the next 28 years, he remained in that position and moved up from sixth class to second class because of his abilities and his character. The British held the upper hand in all these different positions of the administration, but then they delegated all the powerful positions still to Indians, because Indians could rule Indians, through this Bhadra Lok system. This is interesting, but listen to the concept and mentality of these people. And this is pretty much what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was like at 28, 30 years old. Bhadra Lok literally means gentle or respectable people, and was a privileged class of Bengalis, largely Hindus, who served the British administration in occupations requiring Western education, proficiency in English, and other languages. Exposed to and influenced by the Western values of the British, including the latter's often condescending attitude toward cultural and religious traditions of India, the Bhadra Lok themselves started calling into question and reassessing the tenets of their own religion and customs. Their attempts to rationalize and modernize Hinduism in order to reconcile it with the Western outlook eventually gave rise to a historical period called the Bengali Renaissance, championed by such prominent reformers as Ram Mohan Roy and Swami Vivekananda. So this is the mentality of the people. At that time, they actually had been influenced to think that their religion was a bit lower class, so many different kinds of deities and gods, a lot of rituals, and a lot of poverty. So it didn't gel with the Western, was the Christians and capitalism and how God rewards you with so much material enjoyment. So they started to hodgepodge Hinduism according to their upbringing. Now, what happened at this time was that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was stationed in a place called, forget where he was, didn't write it down, but he came across a Gaudiya Vaishnav who was extremely devout, a nice sadhu, and he told Bhaktivinoda that you should get Chaitanya Charitamrita. When I was doing my studies on Jagannath Puri, it's amazing how our life is so different from that time period. If you want to get a Chaitanya Charitamrita now, all you have to do is pull out your phone and press a button, and it comes right up in front of your face, no matter where you are on the planet, practically speaking. Bhaktivinoda Thakur couldn't find a copy. 1 year went by, 2 years, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year, still asking everybody, where's the Bhagavatam? How can I get a Chaitanya Charitamrita in a Srimad Bhagavatam? No, there weren't any. It took him 6 years. And finally had one agent in Calcutta who had talked to different scribes and Vaishnavas and got the book. Bhaktivinoda says, my first reading of the Chaitanya Charitamrita created some faith in Chaitanya. On the second reading, I understood that Chaitanya was unequaled, but I doubted how much a good scholar with such a high level of prema could recommend the worship of Krishna, who had such questionable character. I was amazed, and I thought about this in detail. Afterwards, I humbly prayed to God, O Lord, please give me the understanding to know the secret of this matter. The mercy of God is without limit, and so I soon understood. From then on, I believed that Chaitanya was God. I often spoke with many Vairagis to understand the Vaishnava Dharma. From childhood, the seeds of faith for Vaishnava Dharma had been planted within my heart. Now they sprouted. I experienced anuraga, spiritual yearning, and day and night I read and thought about Krishna. So when he was like 30 years old, the whole thing like blossomed for him. And it's amazing that Nitya Siddha devotees of Krishna don't remember their previous lives. It's not like they're real cognizant when they come into this world. And we know that from Arjuna's example. When Krishna explained to him, evam parampara paptamimam rajasir, I spoke this to the sun god millions of years ago. Arjuna said, how is it possible? You and I are contemporaries. How did you speak it to the sun god? And what did Krishna say? I can remember all of them, but you can't. So even Nitya Siddha devotees don't really remember their past activities and this blossoming of his interest coincided with the next stage of his life, which happened in 1870 when he was 37. Where did he get posted? Jagannath Puri. So all of a sudden he's 37 and he's got a few kids and he's moving up in the ranks in the British government. He's got a good job and he's part of an influential collective. He's starting to write becoming influential. Now he's a deputy magistrate and temple manager in Jagannath Puri and comes in contact with all kinds of other Vaishnavas that are naturally there at this place of pilgrimage. And he spent 5 years there. Let's see. While busy with government assignments, Kedarnath dedicated his off-duty time to nurturing his interest in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He started mastering his Sanskrit under the tutelage of local pundits and absorbed himself in the intense study of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavat Purana with commentaries by Sridhar Swami, as well as the Satsandarvas by Jiva Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami, and Baladeva Vidyabhusana as Govinda Bhasya. He also started searching for authentic Gaudiya Vaishnava manuscripts and writing prolifically on the subject of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, authorizing and publishing Dutt Kastuba and a number of Sanskrit verses, and commenced one of his major literary works, Krishna Samhita. He writes, Pundarik Prabhu published this book, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who we should also pray for. He and his family have COVID, so we can say a nice prayer for him. He was supposed to give class on Radhastami, but didn't. But thank you for him for publishing this book. On the back cover it says, Bhaktivinoda, I had a great desire to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam in the proper swan-like way, but I have no time to translate this huge work. For this reason, I am now extracting the main purports of this great literature and presenting it in the form of Krishna Samhita. So Krishna Samhita is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's kind of condensed Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, in February of 1874, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, his fifth son, was born, Bimala Prasad. Bimala Devi is one of the deities of Yogamaya in the Jagannath temple. When they take, everybody knows the story about Lakshmi and Mahaprasad and Jagannath Puri. So in Jagannath Puri, after they offer the prasad to Lord Jagannath, they take a plate and offer it to Bimala Devi. So she always gets prasad. So she's a very influential special deity in that temple. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur named his son Bimala Prasad. In 1875, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter, who was born earlier, was 10 years old, so she needed to get married. And according to the Bhadralok community, that had to happen in Bengal, since he was Bengali. Couldn't happen in Orissa. So he made an application for a new assignment and moved to Bengal. In 1875, a little bit after Bhaktisiddhanta was born. Let's see. In 1880, Kedarnath and his wife accepted Diksha in the Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition from Bipin Bihari Goswami. In 1885, Kedarnath Dutt formed the Visva Vaishnav Raj Sabha, the Royal World Vaishnava Association. Another parallel that was really interesting was Bhaktivinoda Thakur established these different groups to try and bring Vaishnavas together under one kind of like, in a communal way. League of Devotees, ISKCON, they're reflections of that same tendency, that same mood that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when I did my Guru Puja, my Vyas Puja this year, I was kind of organizing Srila Prabhupada's life into different sections. And what happened was that in 1944, he started the Back to Godhead magazine, which was a monthly magazine. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did the same thing in 1882. He started a magazine called Sajtoshini. And what he did was, the way that Bhaktivinoda Thakur preached was he would do this monthly magazine amongst the Bhadralok community. And you know how Back to Godhead magazine has little snippets of usually Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's like every month there's the next one? Well, the way that Bhaktivinoda Thakur organized Sajtoshini was he would take different books of Gaudiya Vaishnavism and he would put them in periodicals. Every month a different part of the book would come out, Vedanta Sutra, Govinda Bhasya, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and every month that would come out. In this way, gradually over the course of years, he started to influence the intelligentsia, but he also started to bump heads with the upper sampradayas that had been developed. We'll talk about that in a minute. Well, let's go back to this group that he started, the Visva Vaishnav Raj Sabha, the Royal World Vaishnav Association, composed of leading Bengali Vaishnavs, and established a printing press for systematically presenting Gaudiya Vaishnavism by publishing these different books. In 1882, he wrote in Sajtoshini. Let's see, he was 78 means he was 44 years old. And this is what he wrote. When in England, France, Russia, Prussia, and America, all fortunate persons, by taking up the coal, drum, and kartals, will come to the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again and again in their own countries, and raise the waves of the Sankirtan congregational singing of Krishna's names. When will that day come? Oh, when will that day come when the white-skinned British people will speak the glory of Satyanandana on one side, and on the other, with this call, spread their arms and embrace the devotees from other countries in brotherhood? When will that day come? The day will come when they say, O Aryan brothers, we have taken refuge at the feet of Chaitanya Dev in an ocean of love. Now kindly embrace us. When will that day come? So these are the seeds that connect these dots, just like the unfolding of the universe is described. We talked a little about that. We can see these pieces being put together in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. And of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, his son, is going to become a big part of that as the link chain progresses. in January 1886, in recognition for Kedarnath's significant role in reviving Vaishnavism throughout his literary and spiritual achievements, the local Gaudiya Vaishnav leaders, including his guru, Bipin Bihari Goswami, conferred upon him the honorific title Bhakti Vinod. And from that time on, he became known as Kedarnath Dutt Bhakti Vinod, or Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Same exact thing happened to Srila Prabhupada, right? He started in 1944, Bhakti Godhead magazine, and was editor in helping Keshava Maharaj with his different publications. And I don't know what year it was, but he was given the title Bhakti Vedanta. So similar. 59? When he took sannyas. In 1886, Bhaktivinoda attempted to retire from his government service and moved to Vrindavan to pursue his devotional life. However, he saw in a dream that Lord Chaitanya ordered him to go to Navadvipa instead. After some difficulty in 1887, Bhaktivinoda was transferred to Krishna Nagar, 16 kilometers from the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Soon now, after Puri, Sajtoshini started preaching, moves to Navadvip, Krishna Nagar. When he was in Krishna Nagar, he knew he was close, obviously, to Navadvip. Now at that time, Navadvip was where the present town of Navadvip is. And on the bank of the Ganges, on that side of the river, there was a temple that was being worshipped as the apparent location of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Yogpit. So everybody was worshipping there. But when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing his studies, he read in the Bhakti Ratnakara that Lord Chaitanya appeared on the eastern side of the Ganges. Navadvipa's on the western side. So that seed germinated in him, gathering different manuscripts, looking up at the old maps. I mean, he's in Bhadraloka, he's a district magistrate, he's a very influential person. Not hard for him to go to any office, get maps and information. And as he did his research, he was starting to understand that this doesn't really appear like that. Then, one night when he was staying in a dharmshala in Navadvip, he writes, around 10 o'clock that night, it was very dark and cloudy. Across the Ganges in a northern direction, I suddenly saw a large building flooded with golden light. I asked Kamal, I believe that's his son or servant, if he could see the building, and he said that he could, but my friend Karani Babu couldn't see anything. I was amazed. What could it be? In the morning, I went back up on the roof and looked carefully back across the Ganges. I saw that that place where I had seen the building was only a group of palm trees. Inquiring about this area, I was told that it was the remains of Lakshman Sen's fort in Balal Digdi. Taking this as a clue, Bhaktivinoda concluded an investigation of the site by consulting old maps matched with scriptural and verbal accounts, and concluded that the village of Balal Digdi was formerly known as Mayapur, confirmed in the Bhakti Ratnakara as the birth site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we all know, I don't want to go into that big story, but that's another brick in the wall. What happened was that toward the end of his life, later years of his life, not the end of his life, it was still another 20 years, but after he was 50, he started to really get disinterested in his government service. He had a good pension, so he retired, and he started to spend a lot more time. He built his house in Sarabi Kunj and Godrum Dweep, and started to live there, started the Namhatta and preaching and everything like that. But still, knowing that English element was there, his later life was mostly Sanskrit, Bengali writings, not a whole lot. And he wrote one book called Gauranga Lila Smarana Mangala. And in the introduction to that book, somehow or another, this was a Sanskrit book, written with an English introduction, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his life and precepts. And that's the book that he sent to McGill University, he sent some to Germany, sent some to Australia. In that book, he wrote, this is his message of introduction to the English-speaking people about that particular book and who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. Chaitanya preaches equality of men, universal fraternity among men, and special brotherhood amongst Vaishnavas, who are, according to him, the best pioneers of spiritual improvement. He preaches that human thought should never be allowed to be shackled with sectarian views. The religion preached by Mahaprabhu is universal and not exclusive. The most learned and most ignorant are both entitled to embrace it. The principle of kirtan invites, as the future church of the world, all classes of men, without distinction of caste or clan, to the highest cultivation of spirit. This was his message. Does it sound familiar to you? It sounds extremely familiar. It's the exact same thing Srila Prabhupada taught. Look what Srila Prabhupada did. He came to the most degraded part of the world in the Bowery of New York City in 1965 and preached there to totally unqualified people this message of Chaitanya. And look at how what happened. So, toward the end of his life in 1910, Bhaktivinoda Thakur completely gave up everything. He started to do bhajan. He lived sometimes in Jagannath Puri at Bhaktikuti, and sometimes at his house in Calcutta, where he actually spent the last years of his life. But just before that, complete cutting off of everything, he wrote this letter to his son, Bimala Prasad, who had become Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Saraswati, because pure devotional conclusions are not being preached, all kinds of superstitions and bad concepts are being called devotion by such pseudo-sampradayas as Sahajas and the Adibadis. Please always crush these anti-devotional concepts by preaching pure devotional conclusions and by setting an example through your own personal conduct. Please try very hard to make sure that the service to Mayapur will become a permanent thing and will become brighter and brighter every day. The real service to Mayapur can be done by acquiring printing presses, distributing devotional books, and sankirtan, preaching. Please do not neglect the service of Mayapur or preach for the sake of your own reclusive bhajan. I had a special desire to preach the significance of such books as Srimad Bhagavatam, Satsandarbha, and Vedanta Darshan. You have to accept that responsibility. Mayapur will prosper if you establish an educational institution there. Never make any effort to collect knowledge or money for your own enjoyment. Only serve the Lord, and you will only to serve the Lord will you collect these things. Never engage in bad association, either for money or for some self-interest. So this was his instruction to Bhaktisiddhanta, and we can see how he carried that out by establishing the Gaudiya Math all over India and instructing his disciples to go to the West and preach. Finally, in 1908, Bhaktivinoda formally adopted the lifestyle and practice of a Babaji at his home in Calcutta, absorbed in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra until his death on 23rd of June 1914. His remains are in a silver urn interred in his house at Sarabi Kunj, Godrumdweep. And I have one clip by Srila Prabhupada. I'm going to turn this off for a second and then turn it on so I can put it on my speaker.
Can you put it on? Usually do.
Okay.
I thought I could do this easier. Sometimes that gets kind of mixed up.
Any questions, comments while we get that together? Remembrances of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, appreciation? Yes, Pushkar Prabhu.
I was just going
to...
I read the Likhita, you know, and it seems like...
These are the instances. So, in his life, he was Aparna Brahmachari. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had many other sons, and he was the fifth son. And some of his other brothers also, they did not marry. And my Maharaj, he also did not marry. From the childhood, he strict Brahmachari. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. And he underwent very severe penances for starting this movement, worldwide movement. That was his mission. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to do this. In 1896, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to introduce this Krishna consciousness movement by sending his this book, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts. Fortunately, that year was my birth year, and by Krishna's arrangement, we came in contact. I was born in a different family, my Guru Maharaj was born in a different family, who knew that I would come to his protection, who knew that I would come in America, who knew that in American boy will come to me. These are my own Krishna's arrangement.
Jai. Do you have a microphone for Pushkar? Oh, thank you.
It's an insignificant comment, but it seems I can't exactly say that at a certain point his mom and Bhaktivinoda Kedarnath with his maybe cousin were being taken up to Krishnanagar for special education. And I think he was 8, 9, so even before 12, and after some short time, he was known as Mr. ABCs. He had already mastered English even before 12. He was brilliant at English, so they called him Mr. ABC.
John, anything else? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Samapriya.
Just a confirmation how Srila Prabhupada took up the work of Bhaktivinoda. I remember the first time I ever read anything by Bhaktivinoda, it sounded very familiar because I was so familiar with Srila Prabhupada's books and his teachings. And because sometimes we don't find that, you know, it's recommended that we stay with Srila Prabhupada and don't read so many other books. But Bhaktivinoda's work and message, Srila Prabhupada took it up perfectly, and it's very harmonious. There is one story that I think it might be right. I don't know. One devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is my favorite author." And Prabhupada said, "No, he's your second favorite author. I am your favorite." So, but it's such a harmonious contribution. So beautiful. Thank you so much. That was a wonderful presentation.
Fan? Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Anything?
So much to say about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's like we can drown ourselves all day. I just finished the Jaiva Dharma session, 4-day session with IBM, Ishkan Bhagavat Mahavidyala, Vrindavan, Govardhan. It's something about bhakti from A to Z, complete
It really is.
Retained by Bhakti Thakur. What is non-devotional in the name of devotion? What is eternal religion? What is circumstantial religion? What is irreligion name of religion? Anitya Dharma. And he gives so details, and you can literally see the world fits one of them. It's only Krishna consciousness has that eternal fundamental connection with the soul. Everything else is just a external. Functional, you can say. Functional identity they have. All this religion. So it's very, very depth. Very depth.
A to Z. I like the way you presented that, because it really does. Jiva Dharma presents A to Z.
Yes.
It really does.
Even I remember one chapter 8, explains that when you see the deity, it helped me a lot, tremendous help. That in the beginning, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you try to see the substance more than the form. Now, I was bewildered before. I thought Krishna's deity is Supreme Personality of Godhead. So try to see the substance more than the form, and it will transcend you the modes. Once you transcend, then you will see the substance is the form. Did you get it? It's like a little. It's very nice. It's like many little things.
So it helped enlighten you in your perception and relationship with the deity, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
When you take darshan.
Yeah. If the devotee don't hear so much about the deity and Bhagavan, then it will be difficult for them to see that Supreme Absolute Truth, all conscious being, is in this form. Very difficult.
I think Samapriya had something more. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. One more thing. We see that Bhaktivinoda was such a scholar and such a philosopher, and as was Srila Prabhupada, and the conclusion of all the literature and the Vedas and the profound philosophy that he presented to the world was to chant Hare Krishna. This Maha Mantra, he dedicated his life to chanting Hare Krishna. So we see also Srila Prabhupada has come to bring this Maha Mantra to the world. We should take this very seriously, that the conclusion of the Vedas, the conclusion of the Acharyas, is to really chant, that Prabhupada was speaking about substance. This holy name is the substance of everything. Bhaktivinoda talks about it as being the bud. The holy name is the bud. From the holy name, everything is emanating, the form, the quality, the pastimes. This is very, and it's right in our fingertips, it really is. Prabhupada came to give these three magical words. So, everyone please take this up. Hare Krishna.
Madhurya Leela?
I can say that I really appreciate his songs and the humility that that comes through. I mean, he doesn't need to be like that, but he really puts himself in a very
beautiful,
humble position.
When I first joined, I was on Vishnu John's bus, Vishnu John Swami. And what his method was that every day we would go out and put down madrasas on the ground, put Radha Damodar up, usually college campuses, and then all day long sing bhajans. And he would sing a bhajan, and then he would explain it. And when I heard these descriptions of God and the philosophy entwined, because Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all of them, but those two prominent ones, so much philosophy and wonderful descriptions. Like rasa, you actually experience it simply by singing and chanting. It was wonderful.
Thank you, Sabine, thank you. Two little things and then the question. The British ones, they made a railway line from his house to Krishnanagar, just for him.
Yes, from Gwajundwip, from Sarabikonj to Krishnanagar, just so he could go back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Also, his daily routine was so up by the minute. So much writing and so much work and family and everything, but I mean, just...
He's very efficient.
By the minute.
He was very scheduled and got so much done, even though he was working at job. Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, nice. Panja said he had a pocket watch.
Yeah. People used to set their watches by his coming in and out.
Wow.
When he was looking for Chaitanya Charitamrita, didn't he find any Vaishnavas from, disciples of our previous acharyas, like Narottam Das Thakur and a few others?
He came across different ones, but the actual book he couldn't find. Yes, there were different Vaishnavas, certainly.
Must have been hard to find those Vaishnavas also, because there were so many sages.
And to find an actual, somebody who really knew proper tattva.
Thank you.
Stiti Di Prabhu?
This is more technical thing, I guess, but you were talking a little bit about Bhakti Vinod Thakur and, you know, his life, the whole pastime of the life, and how it appeared. He was lost in the moment, so to speak, you know, as opposed to exhibiting a tree, Kala Gya type. But same thing with Arjuna. I mean, if Arjuna was displaying this sort of tree, Kala Gya potency, I mean, the whole Bhagavad Gita and Mahabharata would be a pretty dull affair, you know. We already know how it's going to play out. So, I wondered about that. So we consider these people Nityasiddhas, but it's sort of like a Mahamaya thing of some sort, where, you know, they're engaging in a sort of pastime with Krishna for the benefit of the conditioned souls, and they really are immersed in that part that they're playing. I don't know, I'm just...
Yeah, exactly. I understand it's exactly what you just said. They really are absorbed in that by Yogamaya rather than Mahamaya's potencies, because their true qualities manifest, revealing who they are, and also scripture and other devotees. That's how you know who a Nityasiddha is. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Thank you very much.